This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us for Legal Talk with Kevin Flesh. Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. This is the show we bring each week where we will talk with Kevin about different legal issues that he covers and even some current events maybe that are going around and with legal things. And today, first of all, Kevin, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And this time of year, slip and falls.
Yeah.
Or something that can be very, very prominent for us.
They are. You know, the interesting thing about it is that so in Colorado, a slip and fall, what people think about as slip and falls is really what they call a premises liability case. And there's a statute relating to it in Colorado relating to businesses and what they have to do to be reasonable in their efforts to protect people when they have them come into their place of business. And that's really where we see it most. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're walking down the street and you're going across someone's parking lot or doing something on someone's yard that you don't have necessarily permission to do so, you could be a trespasser. And the business owner's obligation to you as a trespasser is much different than if you and I are doing some sort of business transaction, that there's a benefit for both of us. And so the idea is we've got to figure out what your relationship is with that landowner and then figure out what exactly has happened and whether or not that landowner was reasonable to you under the circumstances.
Sure.
So a little bit more complicated than just a slip and fall. I mean,
right.
But at the same time, we get a lot of inquiries relating to, hey, I was at the gas station. They hadn't plowed or put down any salt or sand. They hadn't made any reasonable efforts to attempt to make sure that I didn't fall down when I walked back to the store after wanting to pay for gas. Is that a case? And it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's one of those situations where any sort of business owner has to be reasonable in their efforts to make sure that they take care of the folks that they want to patron their establishment, and they want to make sure that they're safe when they do that. And we've run into it, especially this time of year,
right?
Because you get the snow and ice. We certainly run into it in grocery stores and big box stores and other places where there's spills on the floor or things that happen around the store that create dangerous conditions where people get hurt.
Right.
Kind of an interesting, you know, sure. They're interesting claims because they're very fact-dependent. And they're very much a decision, what evidence do we have of the fall? How did the mm-hmm. fall happen? Whose fault is it? You know, we've got aspects of contributory negligence in all of these claims. But the idea is that we look at the cases early on to make sure that, because the case generally ties relating to liability. Can we prove that what the business owner did wasn't reasonable?
Now, I had someone, I told them we were going to talk about this, and they said, we all have that one guy on our street that never shovels.
Yes.
Okay. You can be walking your dog, and all of a sudden you get to his sidewalk, he hadn't done a thing. Okay. If someone were to slip and fall in front of your house, let's say on a sidewalk.
Yes.
And everybody, you know, I mean, you had plenty of time to shovel and clear it, but you didn't. Could they possibly do something against you?
So the really interesting thing about that is, unfortunately, we've litigated that case and created law in Colorado. It's the Burbach case, and I think it's Can West versus Burbach is the citation. And we had a client that's exactly what happened, that they were walking in front of a business that had not shoveled the sidewalk in Denver. And we felt that they had an obligation to make sure that sidewalk was taken care of. And at the time, Denver didn't have a city ordinance relating to the fact that the homeowner or the business owner was responsible for the shoveling of that snow. And we lost on summary judgment at the district court level that, quite frankly, the business owner didn't have any obligation, because in Denver, that city sidewalk is not actually part of the real property. And the accumulation of ice and snow relating to that sidewalk is not something that a landowner is responsible in upkeeping. Okay. You'd think they would be,
yeah.
Right? But yeah. As any of us, and there's been reports about this over the last few years. I think Denver's finally realized that their lack of involvement with the government and the sidewalks has caused a real dangerous condition throughout the city. And they've actually had city council set up some sort of group that's going out and doing investigations relating to parts of the city relating to how the sidewalks have to be fixed, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of places in Denver where they're hazardous. But relating to this issue of ice and snow,
right,
there's no obligation to do it.
Sure.
Now, it's not that way in every city, so it all depends on what city you live in, what municipality there is. HOAs have certain obligations that they make mm-hmm. for their citizens that own real property within the HOAs, and it's very fact-dependent upon whether or not that sidewalk is maintained by the homeowner or maintained by someone else. So your question is, well, what does it mean for my particular neighborhood right. and whether or not the neighbor down the street doesn't shovel their snow like they should? Well, if you have an HOA, most likely they have an obligation to do it. And if they do, then they most likely are probably liable for injuries relating to that sidewalk. But if you're in some of these cities that don't have any legal obligation for homeowners to do it, you may not have any responsibility. Gotcha. And if you fall, you may not have any claim against them because right. of this ridiculous case that we unfortunately litigated and lost on it. But it was really helpful and really instructive for us. In fact, right now I have a case where in Denver I have a business where they were washing cars on Colfax. They're a car dealer, and they were washing cars in January, and the water from washing the cars was actually sloughing off the real property and onto the adjoining right. sidewalk. And so I'm making the argument that they created the danger, and the danger then flowed onto the sidewalk, and my client fell and broke his shoulder, that they have responsibility for that. And we're currently litigating that case. And that's going to be a really interesting result mm-hmm. because there's a case from the 50s that says there is a duty of a landowner in Denver in that circumstance. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to get the landowner to be responsible for that situation because they created it.
Right. And they call it case law, right, when you look back. I mean, that's a pretty interesting thing, isn't it, in itself?
It is. It really, law. Yeah. So I always... You know, the practice of law, it's really interesting because almost every day I learn something new. And when you start doing research relating to cases, they're very fact-dependent, and then the interpretation of the law overlaying those facts is always interesting as to what precedent there is out there. Because sometimes there's a divergence in the sense that you may have two different opinions that seem to be pretty similar, mm-hmm. that you have two different outcomes legally. And when you get those situations, then the Colorado Supreme Court takes those up a lot of times. But you've got to go through this process where you fight about it in the district court level or in the trial court level. They make decisions, whether for you or against you. And then once that's resolved, one of the parties that hasn't won the day
right.
can then appeal it to the Court of Appeals and make law relating to that. And if they believe the Court of Appeals has got it wrong, or there's two separate courts of appeals that decisions that have been made, mm-hmm. then they ask the Supreme Court of Colorado to make a decision about, well, what is it really supposed to be with these two different decisions? And sometimes the Supreme Court will take those decisions up, and sometimes they won't, to make a decision where they think it's really important for everyone to understand what the law is in the state.
Right. You're listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. The name of the firm is Flesch & Beck Law, and it's fleschlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. So, I mean, we talk a lot about personal injury and the accidents, but with a slip and fall, it's much of the same order that you want the person to do after an accident, after a slip and fall, isn't it? Because they're still going to be dealing with an insurance company. You got to watch what you say. You want to talk to witnesses. So, I mean, a lot of the principles come into play here, too.
Many, many of the same things happen in a slip and fall. The most important thing that I've found anymore relating to a slip and fall is that people take pictures of the area where they fell immediately after they fell.
Okay.
and if I've got those pictures and it will show that the area that they fell was dangerous, that a reasonable person would look at the photograph and say, ooh, that's not good. That is a problem for the business owner. Those are the really critical times and pieces of evidence that I need. If you have other witnesses to what took place. I just finished a case, for example, where I didn't have pictures of the area where they fell, but they fell in a parking lot that was iced over, broke their leg, the ambulance was called, and the ambulance folks that showed up also fell trying to get to the person that broke their leg. So it's that sort of evidence that was really critical for that, even though I didn't have pictures. So it again is those situations where when it happens, I understand that people get really seriously injured in these situations and are not at their best in the sense of, oh yeah, I need to get evidence, right? But if you can remember that at all, and if there's someone with you to remind them, it's just really helpful to get some sort of photographic evidence anymore relating to this that can prove that you didn't just create the situation or that you didn't fall on your own. The same thing with many of the big box stores and the other types of businesses out there. Most businesses anymore have video cameras in their stores. So if you promptly make a claim, they can go back and look at their video surveillance. That's really helpful too, to figure out, did this really happen and how did it happen? And that evidence is really critical in deciding liability.
Right. And this has probably changed a lot over the last, I don't know, 10 years, but 15 or 20 years anyway, with slip and falls because of all the video stuff.
Huge.
And all that.
Huge. And you know what it's done is it's really helped us in figuring out which cases are really viable and which cases are on the margin. And we've gotten rid of sort of the argument relating to people making these things up with the video evidence and the evidence relating to photographs and other things, especially the snow and ice cases, because if you take a picture of an area where you fell and it's clear that it hasn't been maintained, that there isn't salt, there isn't sand, that the business owner has not been reasonable in their efforts, that's a really good claim to be made to the insurance company that, hey, their insured just didn't do what they needed to do. Mm-hmm. And I talk to business owners all the time as well about what they need to do to make sure that they don't have these sorts of claims. And it's not difficult stuff. It's keeping a log of what you do, being reasonable in your efforts to making sure these things are done, or hiring somebody that's doing it that is being good and reasonable in the way that they've maintained the property, especially where we have these weather events that come through.
So even like schools and all that, they're
so they are. Yeah. So generally speaking, government entities are immune from suit except where you're dealing with maintenance issues relating to snow and ice. So the really important thing about that, and I've got a case right now down at an RTD rider that fell near one of the stops that's maintained by RTD. Because of snow and ice. The most important thing relating to making sure that your claim is viable is that you put them on notice, and the appropriate notice, within 181 days of when the fall occurs. Because if you don't do that, then they're immune. Right. But if you get basically within 6 months of when the fall occurs and you give them the appropriate notice so that they can do their own investigation, then you're able to make a claim and go forward.
Right.
But if you don't do that, you've lost your ability. Whether you have a statute of limitations of 2 years or not, because that's what most slip and falls are, is a negligence claim is 2 years, that statute of limitations is not the important one. What's important is related to the Governmental Immunity Act and that you put them on notice within that 181 days.
Right. And, you know, I don't know of anything that probably causes us more embarrassment. It's even funny. You'll see things on social media sometimes where they just have 2 or 3 minutes of people falling, yes, slipping and falling on out. But we all want to fall. I mean, not fall. When we fall, we all want to bounce back up.
Yes.
You know, and like,
yeah,
no, I'm okay.
And you're embarrassed.
And you're embarrassed about that. And so you got to remember, when you do this, especially where there's people around or in a store, people are going to be probably coming over to you. Are you okay? And it's very easy to go, yeah, I'm fine. You know, that kind of thing too. And so you just want to be careful. And again, we're not trying to mislead anything, but everything is documented there from witnesses too. Hey, they said they were fine.
That's exactly right. That's it. And it happens, especially where you can get the same sort of whiplash symptoms from a slip and fall as you can from a car accident. You can get the same. In fact, I had a case last year that I resolved that the person didn't even fall. They had a situation in a store where some things fell on them and they had to catch themselves on the side of another
end cap?
Yeah, like an end cap sort of thing, and their cart. And so they threw out their shoulder by catching themselves on that end cap. So they didn't even fall down. And we had video of it. And the difficulty in that case is the claim rep was like, well, they didn't even fall. Well, they didn't have to because you created this other dangerous condition with what was going on.
Gotcha.
We ended up resolving the case. But it was one of those situations is if we didn't have any video evidence, they would have said, the other witnesses were like, the person didn't even fall down. What's the problem? And so those cases you've got to get a little creative with in the sense of what you've got an injury and you've got to tie it. The causation piece is where you really have some questions sometimes. But it's those cases that you then weigh what it's worth based upon what you think a jury is going to do, and you figure it out and you try to resolve it.
Sure. Yeah. Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk with Kevin Flesch, 303-806-8886. That's Kevin's number. And as we always tell you on these shows, Kevin offers a free consultation, whether it be by phone or in person. So give him a call. If you've been involved in something like this and maybe you've been trying to handle it on your own or you haven't done anything yet, you'd like some advice, give Kevin a ring, 303-806-8886. Now, much like an accident, you want to seek, when I say an accident, auto accident, you do want to seek medical help immediately.
You do. And especially in the other things we've talked about, sort of getting some of the, gathering some of that evidence, making sure that you put the business on notice as quickly as you can. Obviously, if you have a significant injury and they call an ambulance.
Some kind of probably incident report or something.
That's exactly right. Okay. And what's really helpful in those cases and what we have found to be beneficial is a lot of the larger retail establishments have procedures in place and relating to a fall, and they go through a protocol of what they should do after they get notice of these sorts of things. And so if you put them, some people think, oh, I'll hold off. I won't make a claim right away because that puts me in the driver's seat with the evidence that I have. Well, not necessarily, because you want to make sure that you're creating as much credibility as possible from the get-go. And so I always tell people, as soon as you have the fall, you're embarrassed. Half the time people just want to leave, you know, they just want to get out of the situation because they've fallen, let's say, especially if it's fluid or liquid inside of a store, coffee or whatever it is, half the time the people are all wet and just don't feel right. And they're just embarrassed about the whole situation. It looks like maybe they had the accident themselves and they just freak out and they panic and they leave. And that's fine. You can do that. But what you want to do is you want to immediately after you settle down, maybe within a few hours, call back or go back in or do something to make a claim as soon as possible so that that entity has the ability to look into it and gather some information. Because the trouble with the insurance companies a lot of times is they just don't trust the people making the claim.
Sure.
What they do trust a little bit more is the store manager or somebody that's in charge of safety putting together some sort of a report.
Right.
And so that's a critical time where you have to be really careful about what you say.
Right.
You want to be really descriptive about what took place, but you want to be as vague as possible about your injuries because a lot of times the injuries really don't surface for several days.
Sure.
And so you want to think about that before you move forward with it, just to make sure that, again, you're not getting yourself into a situation where you have to be making excuses later rather than just giving evidence that will be of benefit to you later.
Right. And most times if you're in a public place, people are hopefully going to come over and try to help you. And if they do that, you know, just, hey, would you mind me getting your name and phone number?
Yes.
You know, if you saw what happened, to help me. That's huge.
90% of the time, they don't have the wherewithal to think about that. But absolutely, if you have the ability in any of these situations where you have fallen and you think, oh, you just don't feel right after the fall, get anybody that was nearby their information. Take a picture of them. Get their phone number. Something so that we can later get a hold of them because that's really important evidence as well that most of the time we don't have. People talk about, oh, you know, Jenny or sometimes in restaurant cases, like we'll have to recreate who was on staff at that particular time because we'll have a name of a person and then we'll figure out through discovery when they deny the claim who was there so we can prove what exactly. Because like a lot of times the employees are really good and really customer service driven and they want to help the person, but then the person doesn't get their information and the folks that are then running the claim later completely deny it, and they completely don't know who was there at the time, that will help you. But if we can get at least some sort of name, phone number, some sort of idea of who it is, we normally can track those people down, and we're pretty good about that.
Sure. Now, you know, the situation is probably a lot easier when you're in a store setting, there's people around. And let's say you fall outside, though, in a parking lot.
Yeah.
And there's nobody around, and then you are able to get up. I mean, does it look weird walking in the store and say, you know, hey, I fell out there and I'm hurt? And you were able to walk in. What do you do?
Yeah, it does look weird, but that's what I recommend people doing.
Sure.
And I just, another case that we resolved within the last couple of months, the woman took her car into a car dealership, and it was in the middle, it was later in the evening, so it was super dark. And their parking area where they want people to park their cars for service at night had no lights on. And it was the craziest case. And they had speed bumps throughout the parking area where they parked cars. And so with no lights, she was walking back in to check in her car, and she tripped over a speed bump that didn't have any yellow, didn't have any lighting. And she hurt herself really pretty badly and needed significant surgical intervention after that. And you're like, really? Is that a claim? It was. And she was able to document it. We took pictures of the day, during the day, what it looked like. But we also went out at night and took pictures when they didn't have any lights on in that parking area to show you can't see anything.
Right.
And there wasn't a whole lot of ambient light at all. And so we made the claim with the claim rep, with the insurance company, that, listen, this is what happened. And she had gone in, and she immediately had gotten medical treatment after making the claim. And they agreed that their policyholder was negligent in the way that they handled that, especially with the way that they had the service agreement set up with people bringing cars in later in the evening when it was dark. So as much as people get into those situations and say, oh, it was just bad luck, or, well, maybe I should have been more careful, let's at least look at it and figure that out, because sometimes it's true. Sometimes it's equal fault, right? Sometimes we just make dumb, we just are in places where we shouldn't be, or we're just not paying attention. But other times it's not that case. And we can really make a valid argument that it was somebody else's fault, that they were negligent, that they should have protected you more. And those are the cases that we help people with.
And, you know, you mentioned gas stations earlier, and I mean, those are very easy places to have kind of black ice and hidden ice, because most of them have overhangs so they don't get sun.
Right.
And all of a sudden you drive up, you're not thinking about it, and you get out, and man, all of a sudden, whoosh,
exactly,
feet are gone and your head hits the ground.
That's exactly right. You're looking to just get out, you know, undo your gas cap and start filling gas or diesel. And that's, I've had a number of those cases where you get out and you're like on a skating rink.
Right.
And it's those sorts of situations where you're like, why don't they have a policy in place? And, and you know, I hope in these cases really help those businesses recognize that they have to have a better process in place to protect their patrons.
Right.
Because, yeah, you have insurance, but you just don't want to hurt people. I mean,
sure.
Most business owners don't want that to happen.
Right.
And so through that process, I think we've taught a bunch of people that they just need to be better about it. And if they're better, then there's no claim.
Right.
Because people haven't fallen down.
Sure.
There isn't an issue.
Yeah, I mean, even signs, you know, wet floor or some orange cones around or something, like, or keeping an employee where there's a wet spot
till
somebody can come mop. I mean, there's a lot of things stores can do.
Yes, and most of the larger retail establishments now have those sorts of policies in place. Listen, they're really diligent about having somebody go around the store and making sure that if there is a spill that they get taken care of right away, and they're on the radios, they're standing by the spill so no one can fall, and they're taking care of it as quickly as possible. If they have to move away from the area, they've put signs up, they've put carts around so that people realize that that area is one that's dangerous at the moment. Those are all things that reasonable business owners do. And those are the cases where we get into them, and what we think is, you know, this is the argument that I always have with regard to those sorts of claims, is how quickly should a business owner know about a dangerous condition on their premises? How quickly should they know about the random coffee spill, or in the grocery store, you know, a bunch of grapes falling on the floor and people stepping on them and causing a problem for other patrons? What is reasonable? Because that's what we're going to have to be asking a jury about. And if it seems that I talk to five people in my office, or I, you know, just random people that I talk to on a daily basis, I have these sorts of conversations with them about, hey, I've got this case. What do you think would be reasonable under the circumstances? And if we all can agree, well, that's right on the margin. That's probably not a case you need to pursue. And if you pursue it, it doesn't have much value because maybe it is reasonable. Maybe it's not. And those, but they're still willing to have that conversation and figure it out.
Sure.
And the one thing relating to your initial question about medical expenses, the thing that's a little bit different, you know, in auto accident cases, we talk about med pay relating mm-hmm. to the cars. Well, in some of these instances where you have a fall on the premises, sometimes they also have a med pay provision where they'll pay some of your medical expenses. Okay. Some are $1,000. Some are $10,000 where you don't have to prove fault, but they'll be willing to help you with your medical expenses so that you can get that taken care of. And the reason for that is the insurance companies have found, I think, over time, that if you have these commercial policies with this sort of medical payment coverage, that many of the smaller claims that really don't amount to much, that maybe $1,000 or less,
right.
they'll help the person out so that they don't have to go get a lawyer and they don't have to go through that
sure.
process. And it just is cheaper in the long run for the insured.
Right. Last minute and a half or so, but I want to touch on this. Do sometimes, will sometimes a store ask you to sign maybe an incident report? So I guess my warning is here, be careful what you sign.
Yes, absolutely.
and I wouldn't sign anything really, you know, but I mean, they may want you to sign an incident report and is
yeah.
that okay to do?
Or? Exactly. So what you want to do is if you have to sign anything, what I would want to make sure is that the form is completely filled out before you sign anything. Sometimes they'll have you sign a blank form, like, oh, just that you're here. You don't want to do that because you don't know what they're going to put on the form. Anything that you sign, you're going to want to get a copy of. And so if the business owner is unwilling to give you a copy of anything that you sign, don't sign it because you don't know what it's going to be.
Sure.
And you don't know if it's going to be used against you later as an admission. You can certainly put down your information, your contact information, you know, handwrite out all of that information. But if they ask you for a signature, you have to be a little bit more concerned about what exactly you're affirming in that signature. So
right.
you don't want to go through that process unless they give you a copy of it and you know what the totality of what it says before you sign it.
Right. Well, Kevin, great information. Man, everybody be careful. Know your surroundings and be careful because this is something that could really put you in harm's way. Once again, it is Flesh and Beck Law, fleshlawfirm.com. Kevin's number for that free consultation, 303-806-8886. Thank you for joining us today for Legal Talk. We'll be right back.
If you're 62 years of age or older and own a home, ask yourself, do I want to stay in my home? Have you built up enough equity? Can my family and I benefit from additional cash? Steve Hurley has been a resident of Colorado for over 32 years and is a senior helping seniors. These are questions he can help answer to see if a reverse mortgage is right for you. Call Steve Hurley at 303-885-0254 from Affordable Interest Mortgage today to schedule your free consultation. It may be the most important call you'll ever make.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
David R. Cishon, certified estate planner and registered financial consultant, specializes in working with people who are planning for retirement and retired clients who want to preserve and grow their assets.
Education is the greatest equalizer is my theme. It's always been. More people know, the better their decisions are, the more comfortable they become. So when people come in, we take, some people say, an excessive amount of time learning about the client themselves, who they are, what are their feelings. I don't care how much assets they have. If their assets are important to them, that's critical to me.
Call now for your free consultation with David Cishon of Householder Group. 720-482-1917. That's 720-482-1917. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Householder Group Estate and Retirement Specialist, LLC, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Hi, Jack Corgan. Shopping for a new car can be a harrowing experience unless you use my favorite car dealer, Len Lyles Chevrolet, just east of I-225 on Colfax, 15 minutes from anywhere. I've worked with them for more than 12 years, and I promise you, Len Lyles is not your typical car dealership. Check out their excellent reviews on Google. They are respectful of your time, not high pressure, and have very progressive pricing because low overhead really does mean lower prices. Len Lyles Chevrolet, go east and pay the least.
Chevy. Find new roads.
It's Pet Dental Health Month at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, and they are celebrating oral health for pets all through the month of February. Free oral screens will be offered by their technicians in the lobby, and when your dog or cat receives a dental procedure, you'll be entered into their special dental health gift basket drawing. You'll earn reward points at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center when you download their free app. Hey, this is Scott Watley for Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, and we've trusted our pets' care this great staff since 2003. Call today and schedule your pet for their dental care, 303-708-8050. That's 308-708-8050. Check out their great blogs at LoneTreeVet.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Legal Talk. My name is Scott Watley. Thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Flesh in studio with us, Flesh and Beck Law. Kevin, great to see you, sir.
Yes, thank you, Scott.
Always great to have you in, and man, love talking about all these legal things. Hopefully, most of us never need them, but you know what? Pretty much at some point, I don't know what the stats show out there, Kevin, but most everyone, if they haven't been involved in an auto accident, they're going to be.
Yeah, in talking with a client this week, actually, that listens to the show and other things on KLZ, she was just saying that she always thought it was helpful for me to be on just talking about these things so that people can be more informed and have a better understanding of what they need help mm-hmm. with. Because a lot of times you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And, I mean, that's obvious normally, but it is one, it's worth repeating because I get calls all the time from folks that they understand the snippet, they understand parts of the process. They understand that there's a settlement at the end sometimes. They understand that if it's not reasonable in your mind that you go to trial. But they have no idea the whole process that you go through to really help yourself and some of the pitfalls that people run themselves into. Because as I say in the office all the time, this practice relating to accidents and trying to help people get their lives back on track, there's just so many landmines mm-hmm. that are out there that people don't recognize until they step on one, and then they're calling me trying to make sure that they haven't really made problems with their case long term, that there are things that we can help them with. And that's why it's just so important to give us a call right away.
I started to say, you want to keep making a mistake, call me pretty much immediately.
That's exactly
going
right.
to put you ahead.
Yeah, it will, because we'll be able to have the conversations specifically about your case and what's going on in your case and how you can help yourself in the long run to maybe not make it as difficult through the process. That the really hard cases are when I get the call 5 days before the statute of limitations is going to run, and there's 3 years of history at that point, or right. almost 3 years of history with a person with regard to the accident, what happened, and how what happened has caused them injuries and what they've done. And those are cases that are difficult because you have to try to piece it all together and try to create really the evidence that you should have been creating all the way along and make sure that it's not anything that the other side can use to minimize the value of the case, because sometimes sure. that happens. And so, especially because we're on a contingency, it's one of those things where I explain to people that you're always better in getting us involved early because mm-hmm. we're doing more work for you and getting paid the same.
Right.
So what we hope we're doing is we're adding value along the way so that your claim is worth more because of us being involved from the beginning than at that 3-year mark.
Right. Now, the big, let's see how many words this is for. What's my case worth? That's got to be the number one question by phone or in person you get.
It is. And it's one of those things where I would love to give the, I'd love to be able to put the person in a box for every sort of accident. Oh, you had $3,000 worth of damage to your car, and you've had $6,000 worth of medical expenses. This is what exactly what your case is worth. Mm-hmm. But if that was the case, you wouldn't need me.
Sure.
And they wouldn't need claims adjusters. I mean, workers' compensation does that to some degree. They have a schedule for things, but it's still very much argumentative after that schedule as to, mm-hmm. you know, what's your future needs, what are going to be your disability ratings, all of those sorts of things. And it's the same sort of thing in a car accident case. It's very dependent upon what a person is going to testify like, how a jury is going to like them or not, what sort of injuries you had and how you treated for those injuries. There's just so many dynamics that, especially at the beginning of a case, there's no way that anyone can really give you a value as to what your case is worth. And certainly at the end, we have a much better sense of where things are going. But, you know, I had a hearing yesterday relating to a motions issue, and we were fighting over some issues with regard to identification of a particular person that caused the injury, and we were having a police officer testify. And I would have said, based upon the police officer's report, that they were going to be a pretty good witness and that they would have known what was going on. Well, they get on the stand, and we talk, and we're asking questions, and the officer is a horrible historian about what happened and really doesn't seem to care one bit about anybody involved in the process and really doesn't want to be there. Right. And so it's one of those situations where you get to see what the witness is going to be like. That witness we thought was going to be really helpful for the defense. And so we were minimizing the value of the claim to some degree mm-hmm. because we thought, oh, this witness may really hurt us. Well, after we had the hearing, I realized I don't think it's going to be all that detrimental to us. I mean, there's some things that he's going to say, but quite frankly, he doesn't really remember. And it works exactly into our explanation with other witnesses saying that what the officer said isn't necessarily true. Mm-hmm. And so those sorts of discussions about what is the thing worth really is the development of the case and how things are going to progress in front of a jury. And so without that sort of hearing and without that work being done, you would have probably thought one thing, and it turns out it's probably something else.
Sure.
And so I would love to, I mean, I always like to think that we have a crystal ball about what things are worth, but a lot of times until we get into it and we move forward and we really have conversations about risk and reward, and about what has been done and the fact that all of the treatment is completed, we don't have a good answer.
Right.
And if anybody gives a person a good, what they think is a good answer, just of, oh, your case is worth this amount based upon what you've told me over the phone, they're probably not being honest with, mm-hmm. with the client.
Or they're probably guessing what they could settle it for pretty quick and just be done with it. And
that's true.
Not good for the client either.
That's true as well. So sometimes yeah. you get that valuation in a first interview, or what clients tell me about other firms and the way that they may give you a number that they're either never going to meet or they undervalue the claim thinking that it's a quick settlement.
Yeah.
And neither one of those things you want to have. Because at the end of the day, I want to make sure that the client is better and hopefully back to normal medically, mm-hmm. and then I want to meet the expectations of the client relating to what they'd like to see relating to the financial reward from any sort of personal injury case that they have to get them back to as close to 100% as possible.
Sure. Now, another question comes up a lot. Should I get an attorney after, and I'm putting quotes here, air quotes, a minor auto accident?
Yeah. So a lot of times, the minor auto accidents are the ones where you're going to want to have an attorney right away regardless. Now, certainly if it's a minor accident and you seem to have minor injuries, mm-hmm. you may not need one. But at least to have the conversation is helpful because you have a sense of what it is that you need to do to make sure that you can prove what your damages are. What normally happens in a minor accident, and I'm talking about property damage. Let's say you're driving a pickup like you did a few years ago, and you have somebody rear-end you, and you have a trailer hitch on the back of your vehicle, and the force of the impact of the rear-ending is not enough to cause you any damage to your vehicle because the trailer hitch has caused the other vehicle to stop before it hits your vehicle.
Right.
Well, that's a minor. That's what the insurance company would consider a minor collision because there's no damage to your vehicle. How could there be any damage to a human being inside of that vehicle in the event that the vehicle doesn't have any damage? I mean,
right.
That's their logic. Well, if you think about the dynamics of a car accident, the force that has caused the two vehicles to come together could be fairly minimal, although it could be pretty significant, even though you don't have any injury because of the metal parts involved and how exactly that energy is transferred through the vehicle to the human being in the vehicle. Because most of the time, the human being in the vehicle is the one that will take on the majority of that force. And there's lots of studies out there that would suggest a low impact. So maybe you get hit at 10 or even 15 miles an hour.
Sure.
That can still cause injuries to people, especially where you may have a person that what they consider a thin skull person. In other words, the person has injuries that they've already suffered that causes them to be more fragile. And the law relating to that is that you still have to take that person, if they're injured, they still have the ability to be compensated because that's who they are. And you don't get to pick your victim in a case like that.
Sure.
The person that causes the accident and causes the injuries has to be compelled to pay for those injuries. And so those low impact cases are a lot of times more difficult to resolve. And it's most of the time we have to file suit to prove that there really was an injury and that there should be fair value given.
Right.
Because the insurance companies have done a really good job of, through advertisements and through the way that they've tried to educate the populace, that these low impact cases are nothing more than the setup of these trial lawyers and trying to gain money where there shouldn't be money gained. And that's just not the case. And the studies have shown that. And so those are the cases where people really do need help articulating an explanation as to what happened and to be as credible as possible through the process.
Right. Kevin Flesh is our guest. Once again, you're listening to Legal Talk. 303-806-8886 is Kevin's number. I always tell you, put that in your phone. You never know when you may need it. 303-806-8886. Now, when we talk about minor accidents, most time you see a horrific crash on I-25, you know, 100 people are calling the police. Sometimes on a minor accident, we always talk about this, but you always advocate call the police no matter really how minor. If another car hits you, call the police.
I do, especially even if you don't have any injuries and you don't think that there's going to be any issues down the road. You know, as I said earlier, most of the time, even in a minor crash, you might have some whiplash symptoms later that take, you know, 2 or 3 days to develop. And it's just sort of how our body reacts to those things. And so you'll want to have documented that accident, because if you don't, they're going to try to suggest that the injuries occurred because of some other reason and some other fault. And so the other thing that's generally speaking true is that police officers have, even the regular patrol officers, have some training in regards to accident reconstruction. And so they are helpful in figuring out who exactly is at fault. And they oftentimes will cite the person that's at fault for some sort of traffic violation, whether it's missing a stoplight, careless driving, you know, maybe they impeded traffic.
Right.
All of those things are really beneficial for you because insurance carriers key on the fact that someone was cited. And generally speaking, they think that the individual who is cited is going to be the one that's responsible in the civil side for negligence.
Right. Now, we always talk about, too, the insurance companies and talking to them. You know, usually, I mean, how long does it usually take for an insurance company to get in touch with with a client that contacts you? 2 or 3 days?
Yeah, probably. It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
And what you want to, and especially in the situations where individuals have gotten in serious accidents, where they're on painkillers or
sure.
other things, they have to be really cautious. Because the claims adjusters are trained at that stage of the process to try to gather, just like we talk about for the plaintiff,
yep.
they're doing exactly that same thing for the defendant, and they're hoping they get information relating to trying to minimize the claim as much as they can. And so you have to be really careful about what you say during those conversations, because generally speaking, they're recorded.
Right.
And a lot of times they'll tell you before they start asking you real pointed questions, hey, this is recorded, and you're giving permission to do that. And those are voluntary admissions that you want to be really careful about. And you want to be in your best state of mind.
Sure.
Probably have counsel. But, you know, it's those situations where you have every right to say, wait a second, it's been a couple of days. I'm not quite the way I'd like to be today. I'd like to have counsel. We're going to continue this. You have every right to say, okay. I want to have a reasonable period of time to kind of get my thoughts together and figure out what exactly is happening, right, so that we can then help develop what exactly took place and how exactly people should be responsible for whatever happened and whatever injuries there are.
Right, right. Now, we were talking a little bit before the show. This time of year, it seems like, when the snow falls, the ice is on the ground, it's not the simple two-car collision. Sometimes it can, and we've seen 50, 60 cars before. But when you get into that, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 car collision, man, it gets really
complicated.
You better call really quick.
Yeah, and you better call a lawyer that deals with car accidents on a regular basis, right, because you've got so many different aspects of the case. In today's Denver traffic, you get somebody that rear ends someone at a high rate of speed, and then there's a multiple individuals involved in the cars because we're all driving too close together. We just are, especially in traffic that's, you know, bumper-to-bumper traffic during rush hour times. It then becomes a question of, okay, the person that started it certainly seems to have some fault, but then they have an explanation as to what took place, because sometimes it starts from the front and works its way back. Sometimes it's a rear end that works its way forward, and you'll have to get all of those things figured out. I just finished a case with 4 cars involved in an accident like that. We had to go to one trial where a jury determined that the person that we thought was the majority at fault wasn't the majority at fault. We then had to file another lawsuit against another company and another insurance company for bad faith in the way that they handled the case. And so after 5 years of litigation, we finally resolved the case. Wow. It's one of those situations where if you get into those circumstances, you want to make sure that you have somebody advocating for
sure.
you, because they're difficult cases to pursue because everybody is always pointing the fingers at somebody else. And it's the nature of what insurance does best anyway. Mm-hmm. But when you get multiple insurance companies involved, they're going to try to do that against the person that's really hurt. And so that person that's really hurt wants to make sure that they have somebody involved really early on in the process to help them through the process.
Right. Again, Kevin Flesh is our guest. It is Legal Talk, Flesh and Beck Law. Check out their website, fleshlawfirm.com. That's F-L-E-S-C-H, lawfirm.com. The number, free consultation always with Kevin, 303-806-8886. So let's talk about that free consultation a minute, because I think a lot of things you've gone over here in this segment about, you know, setting expectations with the customer, because I think sometimes people really don't understand what all you do for the money that you, you know, your
yeah.
fee that you charge. And
right.
I mean, man, first of all, there's a lot of people involved, I mean, on your staff.
Sure.
A lot of things going through, talking to insurance companies, knowing policies. And I'm telling you, I think people just think, well, gosh, I can talk to the insurance people. I see my limit, you know. I can probably get that. And, man, they're going to get messed up.
Well, and so, yeah, I'll give you an example. We've got a client that we had just handled a car accident for them. We resolved it. Unfortunately, during the process of the resolving that claim, they got into another car accident. And, unfortunately, our client was really badly hurt. She was in the hospital for about 3 weeks after that accident. Luckily, she's now working her way over to Craig, and we hope that she'll be able to.
She was badly hurt.
She was really badly hurt. We didn't think she was going to make it. Her family was really concerned that she had a significant head injury and significant other injuries from this accident. And so what has happened in that case is the at-fault party immediately tendered the limits that they had. They had $250,000 worth of limits. And so they were like, great, you know, that's great. So they've got the check. And now the question is, she's got over $1 million in medical expenses. And is there any subrogation interest? What's going on with that? And what had happened is her husband had come in to see me, and he said, well, we got the limits. I don't need you for anything relating to that. And we're just going to cash the check, and we're going to move on, and things will be fine. I was like, whoa, wait a second. We got to figure out, I mean, for your own sake, you can certainly cash the check. That's not a problem. But you're going to want to make sure that you keep, I mean, it's $250,000. you've got a health insurance carrier that's probably going to be making a claim for some sort of reimbursement since you've gotten this money. You want to make sure that you put them on notice and that you get that resolved, because if not, they're going to be looking for that full $250,000. And whether you want me to help you on an hourly basis or in a contingency or however, for the other parts of the case, I think you need to think about what it is that you're doing relating to this, because you may set yourself up for a lot of liability down the road. And so it was that free consultation that we had where he had been through another case where we're dealing with it already, but I don't think he recognized the significance of what was going on. And so we had him slow down relating to that, and I think we'll be able to help him through that process and get it taken care of so that he gets some money for his client or for his wife and for our former client, because the real issue is whether or not she's going to need future care and whether or not this $250 really compensates her in whole for anything. And that's going to be the argument that we're going to be making to her. So even in those situations where someone says, oh, I've gotten the policy limit, maybe it's the $25,000 policy limit, they still have to be really careful about what happens on the back end with that money relating to the other people that may have their hand out, to the plaintiff in a car accident case, that they may have legal rights to some of that money that you've gotten from that at-fault party, because you just didn't investigate enough as to what was going on and what you may be responsible for. Right. And that's where we help people.
Sure.
We go through that process and we find out what exactly they have for health insurance, what that health insurance policy says, because every policy is a little different relating to that. And then we also look at their car insurance, see if there's any other monies that we can get from their own policy, because most people don't recognize what they have when they say they have full coverage. So it's all sort of the dynamics relating to that, and that's what I'm talking about when I talk about the minefields that you can step into without recognizing it. Because you don't want somebody to go and spend $100,000 on, you know, the example that I gave, spend $100,000 on some sort of treatment that they needed or some sort of device that is going to help them and find out later that you're going to have to pay some of that money back to a health insurer that then sues you 2 years ago because they find out that you got the money and used it for some other purpose than repaying for those health benefits that they received.
Wow. Yeah. So how does it work, or does it work any different when maybe, you know, an individual is hit by some, like, a company truck?
Yes.
Or something like that? I mean, what's involved with that then? Do you try to find out things about that driver, their history, different things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It all really depends on how significant the injuries are and how much we're looking for. There is a dynamic of these cases relating to sort of the economics of what it is that's going to cost us to pursue a claim. I'm not going to spend $25,000 to pursue a $25,000 claim. That doesn't make sense to the client, because they're never going to get anything out of it, and there's never going to be a real positive impact in their life relating to it. But if we're talking about a commercial policy where there's significant injury, commercial policies generally are $1 million or more relating to what the potential that you can recover from that insurance company. And so what's helpful in those sorts of cases is figuring out what exactly has gone on with that driver to prove a history. Because if you can prove some history relating to maybe they weren't following their DOT regulations properly, maybe they were driving over the limits that they had, maybe they had prior incidences where they had significant problems with their driving, and the employer knew about it, and they still allowed them to drive a truck in certain circumstances where it was clear that they were going to be negligent again. Those sorts of situations, we can create other claims that would be of benefit to the person that's been hurt, so that they can either prove some sort of punitive sanction or some sort of situation where we can get a multiplier of what the person is entitled to prove a point to that particular employer or to that driver. And those sorts of cases take on a life of their own sometime with going back and looking at things and creating a real understanding of what took place before the person got behind the wheel.
Right. And, you know, getting back to free consultation real quick, and this is why it's so valuable, because these things take time. This isn't, in most cases, probably any case, where it's a three-month deal. I mean, these take time. You just mentioned 5 years.
Yeah.
So people have got to understand, I mean, they've got your expertise, you know what you're doing, you're trying to get the most for them that you can, and again, your top concern is getting them well and getting them back healthy.
Yeah, in an initial consultation when somebody comes in and they have I'll call it sort of your standard run-of-the-mill rear-end cases, moderate damage, $4,000 worth of damage to your vehicle, you get 3 months of medical care. You went to the ER after the fact because you were having some real issues with your back or neck. And the person comes into my office a week after the accident, and they're asking me, well, what's the case worth? You can't really tell them that. The other thing that I explain right from the beginning is I want to make sure that I'm a consultant early on in the process to help you answer any questions relating to the medical side of it. I'm not a doctor, but we see enough of these sorts of sure. cases that we can help people through. Just give a sounding board with what the doctors are doing, and certainly not suggesting that what the doctor says relating to treatment is wrong. But if you get into a situation where you're plateauing in treatment or things just seem to be not really fixing you, maybe, hey, have you tried this sort of treatment or gotten a second opinion relating to this? Or you're 24 years old, you've had 6 months worth of chiropractic treatment, and you're still your neck still bothers you every morning when it really shouldn't at 24. Have you gotten an MRI? Have you had any injections to make any decisions about maybe there's something going on there that is an issue that is more diagnostic that can help you? Because these are long-term problems. Right. And the thing that I say to people from the beginning is I want to make sure we take as much time as we need to get you better. And that does mean that we're not settling this case right away. And I have mm-hmm. clients that call and say, oh, I've been doing this a couple of months. I'm ready to settle. Like, well, are you done with your medical treatment? Because if you're not, I don't want to do that. We get to do this once, and we want to do it right.
Right.
But if you're not willing to do that, then we need to look at what exactly the motivation is. And sometimes in initial consultations, the motivation is just purely money. It's sure. not getting a fair result. And those cases are ones that we generally don't take because right. they're not the right folks for us.
Yep. I mean, when I was living in Dallas before I even moved to Denver, Thanksgiving Day of '85, I was going to a Dallas Cowboy game. Got rear-ended. I mean, went through tons of treatments, acupuncture, all kinds of things. And it wasn't until that was Thanksgiving 85, January 88, I had to get a fusion in C6 and 7.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it takes a long time. So just have patience with this.
Yeah, and in our society, we don't have patience. And especially when you're not feeling well, it's right. really difficult. So, but the important thing is we're there as a resource to help you through that process while we're figuring out what exactly is going on, so that at the end you understand what you've done and you understand what the result is and how the financial reward relating to that is really just trying to get you back to 100%, and it never is.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part about what I do, is we're trying to get you as close as you were just before the accident happened. But everybody tells me your health is worth a lot more than
There's people that would give every penny back to have both legs or
exactly.
arm or be able to walk or
right.
play with the grandkids, whatever.
Yep. But we try to help people get as close as possible. Jury trials, that's the only thing that jurors can do is give money. They can't unwind time. I wish they could, but they can't do it.
Sure. Well, be smart about this. If you get into an accident, give Kevin a call, 303-806-8886. It's Flesh and Beck Law, fleshlawfirm.com. Kevin, as always, thank you very much. And thank you for joining us today for Legal Talk. Hope everyone has a great day. Don't go anywhere. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
And opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.